All right.
45 minutes.
Yeah. I'll be watching the time. So we're already recording. So it's just a matter of
okay.
Yeah. All right, guys. Arsh, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you guys here because, in a sense, like I didn't realize until I talked to you here at the Global Summit how different things were for people your age or in your generation. So let's start by just sort of giving my audience, like, first of all, how old you are and the background you have in Bitcoin and, what you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, my name is Ella Huff. I'm 20, maybe towards the higher end of Gen Z, but I'm a junior in college at Cornell, and I found Bitcoin about 3 years ago when I was a senior in high school. Found it it was on the blockchain lens, and so it completely went over my head. And then 2 years ago, I was able to go to the Oslo Freedom Forum, and that is when I say I really discovered Bitcoin, and I've been down the rabbit hole ever since, and so very grateful to work with Arsh on Generation Bitcoin. It's been great.
Okay, great. Arsh?
Yeah, I'm Arsh. I'm 18 years old. I got into Bitcoin about 2.5 years ago, and I started just, with trading and arbitrage. I was very interested in the monetary aspect of things, and then I started Generation Bitcoin about 2 years ago. We're in an initiative to educate high school and college students about Bitcoin. And then I started with that work. I got very curious about Bitcoin from the philosophical lens, and I started working at HRF just over a year ago.
And you guys have impressed me greatly with what you've been able to do in your life so far, and I suspect it's not a coincidence that you guys are in Bitcoin. But let's get into sort of like your generation a little bit, because we've been talking, obviously, and the thing that's really kind of blown my mind is that so many of your colleagues don't really know that much about Bitcoin, or they're really confused. So can you guys give me or give my audience some sense of what you think your generation, what they like know about Bitcoin, if anything at all, and how they perceive it?
Well, so we had Club Fest the other day at school, and so it was all advertised under Cornell blockchain. People would come up, hey, do you know anything about blockchain? And a lot of them said, no, but I know about Bitcoin or I know about Ethereum. So I think that's promising that they know about Bitcoin. But I'll say the deeper problem is that in the US especially, they haven't encountered the problems that Bitcoin solves for people all over the world. And so for them, it's never been prevalent. It's never really been something they look at. So whenever I talk to friends, normally we start more at like, what is money? And all of those conversations. And then they're like, oh yeah, Bitcoin makes perfect sense. They're very receptive. They want to learn more and go down the rabbit hole. But it's kind of just being there to kind of ask those initial questions and start helping them think about this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think what we're seeing right now from a lot of people, because I just graduated high school like 3 months ago. So I was working on Bitcoin, since freshman year. I was obviously very crazy about it. I was the person going to my friends talking about it. And a lot of people, where I live, it's a very like middle to high class area. People just like, I feel like they don't care about Bitcoin. When they get into the broader blockchain crypto space, it's typically through maybe a trend that they see on TikTok. Maybe someone like a lot of YouTubers, a lot of high profile YouTubers start advertising like crypto schemes and NFTs. And I know because I was a part of, that's actually how I got into Bitcoin. That's how I found Bitcoin, is through these schemes. So a lot of them kind of, fall for the trap of, a very like sexy looking like new NFT thing or like a crypto object. But obviously, like, I would say that's more in like the United States. Now, with the HRF lens of things, when I talk to people and when I travel to other countries, and when I talk to younger people, in the teens, young 20s, they get Bitcoin. Like it just inherently makes sense to them. There's obviously, I mean, the advertising in America right now, especially for these things, are more they're highly advertised in the sense that, like, you can kind of, you know, get someone to fall short of it. But even when you travel to different countries as well, right? Like, you have that scene there. But, like, people kind of, you know, follow the signal, I feel like. They definitely start to understand Bitcoin more in the case that they might actually need it, so.
Yeah. And I think from the U.S., there's so much noise, as Arsh, you've just mentioned. And also, something that I'd really like to see is, well, there's two things. A much greater emphasis on sats, because, so, okay, let's say they get onto Coinbase at least. You know, $30,000 Bitcoin is just a very quick deterrent. They're like, we don't have our nest eggs built yet. You know,
that's actually the number one deterrent.
I would really, really like to see much more emphasis on sats and that, yeah, no, there are, you can buy like pennies worth of Bitcoin. Like you don't need to spend all that money all at once. And then the second really big thing I'd like to see is just the encouragement of more disciplines in the space in Bitcoin, because at least what I'm seeing at school is predominantly in the club, it's all math and CS students or engineering or something like that. And so maybe they spend their whole day coding. And so then like smart contracts and all the Ethereum development is really appealing, or Solana or whatever it is. And we know Bitcoin is for everyone. Like, no matter what you're studying, you have a place in Bitcoin, and just really trying to make that more visible, I think, will be really good to bring people more into the space.
You know what's striking me about all of the stuff that you're saying? This isn't unique to your generation, right?
Yeah, like, no, it's not.
And a lot of the same sort of, like, you know, biases, like particularly the unit bias, right? Yeah. Seeing the 26,000 or whatever it is today, and saying, oh my God, I can't afford that. And they don't realize that you can buy fractions of a Bitcoin. There's the other stuff with you know, NFTs and seeing the new and shiny thing and seeing what's trending and stuff like that. It really does seem like you know, it's not really that different than, say, people in my generation that, you know, get into it the same way.
Yeah, and so earlier today we had an amazing session, and Florin in the Philippines, when he was talking about like the Bitcoin cafe on the university campus, and the whole menu was in sats, it just made me like I can't wait to go back and go talk to like the coffee shop that everyone goes to and introduce them to Bitcoin. And then, like, again, just kind of going outside of the school and just going where students are interacting with merchants or wherever they are, and just integrating Bitcoin in that way so that it's just visible. It's just in their face. Like, so maybe if we can just come to students instead of asking students to come to us, maybe that's a new path.
I mean, like, the figure with sats is definitely more appealing, right? Like, if there's a coin per se, and you know it's like 10 cents and you stack up, you know, 10,000 of them, it's like, holy shit, I'm rich, you know. But if it's like, you know, you denominate in sats, right, like, that kind of eliminates the unit bias. And it kind of makes like the figure seem larger in terms of, like, compared to like other tokens, right? Like, it's a very intimidating price. So like, that's definitely like the number one deterrent that I see from a lot of people that, like, actually cross the bridge, and like, maybe they're like in the middle phase, you know, like, oh, like, let me just like buy Bitcoin, let me like do like a transaction or something, you know.
Well, these are all obviously like human cognitive biases that sort of get in the way. And it's amazing how much of that sort of like enters into their investing and buying decisions when it really shouldn't. It should be about money and stuff. So let's get into sort of what you guys learned, I guess, in your generation about economics, about money, about all of that stuff. Tell my audience what you learned in high school or college and what's being taught today, and how maybe that's influencing your generation's view of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, like, even going to, you know, a public high school, I mean, public school all the way from elementary up. And the curriculum, you know, is especially in like economics, right? Like, when I started to get curious about money, earlier on, I was like, okay, like, I want to learn about this, like, in school, like, this would be really cool. the only class that I actually got, you know, talking about investing in, you know, mutual funds or like 401ks when you earn, you know, earn your fiat W-2, right? Mm. It's just like, we only had like a semi financial literacy class in like the first semester of junior year. And it was online thanks to COVID, which made it even worse. So it's like, obviously there's not much like investing scheme. Like, sure, you may have like, you know, that like one kid that's like into like stocks or like actually like cares about like financial literacy. And it's actually become like an obstacle for me because I graduated high school 3 months ago. And if I were to go to college, I don't even like know what I would study. Like, I'm very into economics, but like, obviously that's backwards learning it from a university right now, right? Like, that just like makes no inherent sense. But on like the public school level, the education part of, the financial literacy education part really just doesn't tie in. I mean, we're like, especially like, you know, where I'm from, like there's people who kind of care about it, but then they don't care about it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm witnessing right now is once I graduated and everyone started college as of this month. Mm-hmm. And now I see people on social media complaining about how they were never taught like how to pay their utility bill. I'm just like, you know, so I mean, it's no coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I was never taught, I never had any financial literacy course ever. Mm-hmm. I am just grateful that my parents made it a priority to teach me and talk to me about money, but never in school did I ever encounter it. I guess I definitely drank the macroeconomics Kool-Aid about, you know, here's the like the one graph and you can kind of tie it all back to this. And then there's these equations and it all works out perfectly. Like, I remember taking it and it was, ask anyone, I said it was my favorite class. I was like, I love this class. It's, and I feel like so smart in it. And then you read like the Bitcoin Standard or Principles of Economics or any Bitcoin book, and you're like, oh my gosh, that was all wrong. Mm. But I wouldn't have known to question anything that I had learned with it. And now I'm, I have to take microeconomics, and Paul Krugman wrote the textbook. And that's a little, that's frustrating. But yeah, Arsh, I was kind of thinking, you know, what do I study in college? And I, since I'm a couple of years older than you, I was starting in CS, but then I ultimately switched to cognitive science because I think just thinking is something that should be prioritized, but it's not. Mm. Like, in school, no one teaches us about financial literacy. Is it because like they don't want us to be financially independent, or why is it not ever taught? And we all need it. We all use
it. And I mean, like, we went to like pretty like good schools in good area. Like, my high school is like rated like top 10 in Georgia, like the whole state.
Yeah.
Ella goes to like Cornell. And like, we grew up in like pretty like good areas. So it's just like, if they're not teaching it here, they're definitely not teaching it.
Well, they're clearly not teaching it at school, but like, you did have parents that taught you. At what percentage of your, you know, generation would you say, at least among the people that you know, are financially literate or at least understand, you know, normal stuff?
I think it's a scale. Like, it's kind of hard to like quantify like who, I guess, like knows what. It's kind of something that you like learn as you go. Some people start at a younger age. Some people are now realizing it, like my friends. And I think it's just like about the background, right? Like, a lot of my friends, when I ask them, like, you know, what do your parents do and all this stuff, and they just like don't really know. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and that goes to show like they're definitely not talking to them about like finances. Mm-hmm. Or anything else. My parents, you know, they're business owners. Like, I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. So I was like always like asking questions. I was always like surrounded by it. And I'm now, you know, I'm realizing that like not a lot of people are surrounded by that, because it's just, you know, pretty casual. You know, typically both their parents would work, and like they just wouldn't talk to them about it, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really start till I was I had an allowance. I was always saving it. But then I got my first paycheck when I was about like a senior in high school-ish. And that's when we really started to have the serious conversations of, you know, Ella, this is your money. Like, this is your money. You get to make the decision of what to do with this. But we really think it would be a good idea if, you know, we can tell you about like how to start saving for retirement and thinking about your future, because like you need to take care of yourself. Like, we're educating you, we're raising you, but once you graduate, like, it's, you got to go live your life. And so, which I like I should, you know, you've done everything to support me, and I can do it. But so many, or a lot of my friends, they haven't had that. I will say there's still a handful that are pretty financially literate, but still like not on Bitcoin. So yeah, I think Arsh said it best. It's a scale.
Yeah. Well, something that you said before really kind of struck me, because you said that, like, you know, when you're growing up in a society like this, you don't really make money, right? Like when you're little. But you mentioned that you were getting a paycheck as a senior. Maybe do your friends work, or are they have they been employed, and like how do they approach money if they do work?
Yeah. So I think right now this is like the first time when a lot of my friends are now, we've had maybe our first real official internship, and now you're getting like your W-2 and you're going to have to file your taxes and stuff. And so I think now these conversations are coming up, but I am just of the mindset that when you're like a sophomore, junior in college, that's too late. Like, or maybe not too late, but that's not early enough. Because so, okay, when you apply to college, you can apply undecided, but you have a greater chance of getting in if you kind of know what you're going to study, if you're passionate about what you're going to study. But how to support yourself should be something that's on your mind. Like, you're going to college to get a degree or a tool, or maybe you don't even need to go to college, but it's just what society says you should do. And so I think life,
like our share.
Yeah. Like, you don't need it. It's just like life, you're just acquiring tools in your toolbox, and a college degree can be a tool. Bitcoin is a huge tool. And so, yeah, I just think those conversations should happen a lot sooner. And especially just on the Bitcoin topic, if we can kind of, and this is what Generation Bitcoin is really trying to do, is if you don't have much knowledge of fiat yet or crypto, like, this is great for us to come in now, and like, this could be your first base level of what money should be and how you should think about saving
instead of riding the roller coaster. You know, it's just like you kind of want to like reel them in when, you know, and just go straight with Bitcoin.
That sounds a little like, I don't want to come across as like manipulative or like oh, we want to like capture you, because Bitcoin, you should think for yourself. Like, that's the whole point.
You
like,
have to.
Yeah, it's like when you, life is long, and like, think about what you want to do. Like, what makes you happy? What fills you with purpose? And then Bitcoin, like, every Gen Z does not need to go become a Bitcoin expert, but they should just be able to use Bitcoin as a tool to go do what just fills them with purpose and, you know, brings them joy. And like, that, I think, is the goal. And that's why we really started Generation Bitcoin.
Well, what I got from what you just said right now is that, in a sense, the advantage that your generation has is that they kind of know that they don't know, right? Yeah. Like, whereas people my generation, it's like, oh, I already know about money. Yeah. You know, like, I thing's a scam. But like, at least with your generation, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I kind of don't know anything. Yeah, so yeah, here, and then they're more receptive to your message.
There's this collective sense of doomism. Yeah. It's like everyone copes with it in different ways. Some may go become, you know, like try to fix it and become more, you know, financially responsible and like actually learn about money. Some may just wait till they have to, you know, until they really have to deal with, being able to, you know, do a tax return or like being able to, I mean, like people are now opening, like when I started Generation Bitcoin, like people were then opening like bank accounts. Like, you know, you have to be 16 to open a bank account, and it's just like, boom, like that's your first introduction. A lot of kids didn't have it by 16, but they definitely have it around now, I feel like, because in high school, a lot of people weren't working jobs, but those who were typically, at least in my area, typically just doing it because they wanted to have extra money. And then in college, it's kind of the same thing. Like, you have to focus more on studies. So most of the time people can't work a job, or maybe they will part-time. So I think being able to have, you know, a paycheck, like getting your first paycheck, that's like when it's like actually like your eureka moment, you know, and you're just like, what do I do here, you know?
Yeah, because you realize, yeah, it's just like you have it, you realize like it's in your hands, it's now real. Mm. Like, I mean, even if the money's
it's not that real.
Like,
yeah.
No, but the money's not that real. But like, I think you're like, oh, I actually now have some ownership over where this is going. Mm. And it's not just like a theoretical concept of, oh, yeah, when I graduate and when I get a job, like now it's actually happening now. Mm. But I have a lot of friends that work at school.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of student jobs that happen, and a lot of friends that work.
And typically people get, you know, if they're more serious about what they do, like people start getting blessed with internship opportunities. Mm. Typically like what would you say, like freshman, sophomore, junior year?
Yeah, I'd say that the big types of your internships start happening this summer after your sophomore year of college. But no, it's really honestly crazy, the whole job market system that you kind of get funneled into. Like people start like you're, even after your freshman, like you need to have like the primer internship, and then as soon as you finish that, like internship stuff happens like a year and a half out.
Yeah,
so it's really crazy.
Well, that's interesting too, and maybe a little bit different when I was going to college, is that there's like well-worn paths to certain careers, so well-worn that you prepare starting your freshman year.
Yeah.
Like you didn't do that, at least when I was going to college. Yeah.
It's like an uphill battle now. Mm. Especially for someone who's like curious about Bitcoin. Like if you're like a college student curious about Bitcoin, I mean, like, forget it. Like it's so hard to get internship opportunities, because I mean a lot of companies in Bitcoin are not like equipped to the scale to be doing internships. Mm. And you know, that's obviously the problem that we're trying to solve as well. Because it isn't, I mean, I feel like it doesn't really take much for a company, except, you know, a job listing in another, you know, another tab from HR or something. But yeah, I mean, like, definitely people who are coming into the Bitcoin space, like, I think we want to provide the opportunity to have an internship to where it's like completely different. And those people who I know who did get internships in Bitcoin, including myself, and we're able to, like, you know, scale up from that, there's definitely more opportunity for those who, you know, who are fit early on, rather than like, you know, I have a friend that works at, you know, NCR. She interned over the summer. She started her process like 9 months out, you know? And it was just like, and NCR hires like 10,000 interns. So
that's, wow,
it's insane.
Wow. Yeah, and I think so. An orange pilling mechanism that I think has worked really well for me, it's like, okay, I see my friends, I see you working on your internship, sometimes a year and a half out, you're juggling all your classes, you're maxing out your credits, maybe you're working, you have clubs, extracurriculars, like you are working really hard, you're exerting a lot of energy. And so for them, it's kind of like Bitcoin, like it lets you just store all that energy. Like instead of just like, I don't know, like you're just fighting to like close all the holes, like a bucket, like leaking out water of energy, and like, oh, but I got to do this so that I can get this, whatever. Like, what if you could just save all the hard work that you're doing? And I don't know, that's worked well in the past, thinking about Bitcoin and that.
Well, I want to pull on that thread a little bit, because what you just described is very much like they feel a sense of almost like being forced to go down a particular road.
Oh, yeah.
And you're saying, hey, there's a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they even have the conception that things could be different? Or is the fiat path so prevalent and so in front of them that they can't even imagine it? Because that seems to be something like maybe related to the doomerism you were talking about, maybe related to sort of almost like a lack of agency that you were describing.
Yeah, I think it's somewhat socially enforced too, because so in schools, like they're great because they're hubs of people that you can like talk and have all the side conversations and build community. But also you see everyone, like, I don't know, even like in class, like working on other stuff in the tabs or whatever it is, like you just feel like, oh, but they're doing so much, so I need to do more. And it's almost like society just telling you what to do. And it's really hard to kind of switch the mindset or try to go a different way, because I mean, I still feel it too. Like I'm a huge Bitcoiner. Like I know Bitcoin's the answer, but it's also like, well, I don't have my nest egg built. Like, how do I, you know, take care of myself in the future? It's like,
well, it's a yeah. very zero sum mentality that you're describing, right? Like where like I have to get like I have to compete with these people. A lot of the stuff that you know, the entrepreneurialism is based on, well, I'm not going to compete against these. I'm going to yeah. give a brand new good or service that other people want.
Yeah, and I think also like Bitcoin allows you to just have so many different careers too. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's so easy to get into the, is that a lot of my friends, like, okay, whatever my junior year internship is after, like, that's where I need to get my return offer so that when I graduate, I have a job. And then like, oh, I'm just going to be at that company mm-hmm. like for a good chunk. Yeah. So it's like, you think you have to plan out your entire life right now, because it's also like, okay, like what city might I want to raise a family in? Because mm-hmm. my junior year internship yeah. could, you know, lead to my return offer. And then like, that's my probably where I'll put down roots. And then, but do I want to live there? And it just, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of, I mean, like right now, even you're seeing like records of like people who are graduating college
yeah.
without like any job opportunities. Or like any internship opportunities, you know, for a long time, depending on, obviously depending on the pace that you're in, you know, so.
Yeah. And it's like the set path for you almost. And I don't know, the sense I get with these zero sum jobs is that the people at the top don't want to leave. So it just causes like a traffic jam all the way down. And when you're in a recession economy like this, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, like the average. Like what? Like the average like 15-year-old has been to like, you know, like four recessions,
which is crazy. But I mean, this kind of the world you guys were born into in a way, right? Because you know, I guess 2008 is maybe a little bit too early for you guys to really remember too much. But
I don't know. I was five, mm-hmm. but I don't think I remember that much. Like, so it's like kindergarten.
My family, like we were building our house at the end of 07. I'm talking like I remember it. But you know, my dad still tells me stories about like how he just got stuck right in the middle of it, you know. So like that was like, I guess like my first like early memory of like, holy shit, the system's like broken, you know. So
yeah. And I don't know, this just popped into my head, but also it's all of like the consumerism, like so much of our generation is on like Instagram or whatever, where it's like, oh, you got to buy this, you got to buy that. And it's just, there's just so much demand for like your time, your money. It's just like
every social. I mean, there's like at least five very prominent social medias and they're all competing for your time effectively. Right. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, like what social medias are like, common upon Gen Z, and there's like way too many.
Really? Well, name some of them besides Instagram. I know that one.
TikTok,
Snapchat, like a lot of people do Pinterest. A lot of my friends doom scroll on Zillow.
What?
Yeah, a lot of my people, it's like a weird obsession now. They like doom scroll on Zillow and they're like, yeah, I'm going to have this house one day, and they're like, I probably won't. But no, that was like half a joke. Like Zillow is obviously not social media.
Be Real, I don't know if that's really social media, but basically it's a little fake. It's called Be Real, so that you're real. Like they just send like an alert random times throughout the day, and you have to take a photo of whatever you're doing.
Wait, that's a thing?
Yeah. And it's like what you're doing or like who you're with, and it takes like a selfie and like what's in front of you, and then everyone like can see what you're doing. And
but why do you call it fake? Because it's called like, Be Real, and you're like, oh, but it's fake.
You can redo the image. Like I've been with people when it comes out. I don't have it, but I've been with people when it comes out, and it's like, oh, like Be Real, like let's like clean this or whatever. Like it's like everyone get together. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just very artificial.
Yeah.
And it's called Be Real. There's some irony in this. Yeah. Well, that whole there is sort of like this like artificiality about the consumption, certainly. And you know, we were talking earlier about how you guys don't think your generation really reads books, but but instead it's all audiobooks or podcasts or something.
I feel like it's just dunk after dunk. But that's not all the time. I think it's just like a different way of people obtaining information. You know, myself included, right? Like a lot of people do audiobooks. A lot of people do podcasts. I mean, like, I didn't really read until Bitcoin. like actual books.
Crazy.
Because yeah. It was like no need to really read in school. Like everything was just like.
What you don't need to read textbooks or something
online. No, we don't. I didn't have textbooks
in high school.
No, I had no textbooks. They were all like online. Mm. And a lot of times, like, you don't really need them. I think I maybe use them once or twice a year.
Mm. Oh, I had textbooks. I don't know. I won't say I'm too much of, like, a rule follower. Like, I was always paranoid they're going to call on me and I wouldn't have read. So then I read it. But I think it's, I don't know, PDFs are becoming more common. Now, like, at school, we have this program where we don't actually buy physical textbooks. They're all online, yeah, it's all like, wrapped up into a program.
Yeah, that's how it is in high school.
Yeah, I like it doesn't make me want to read them. I mean, I do, but and sometimes I kind of skim it because it's just like so much digital. Like I just kind of want like a physical book. So.
And but I mean, you do have like different ways of consumption,
yeah,
and
yeah.
A lot of it is very geared towards sort of grabbing your attention instead of you having to pour your attention into something.
And I don't think people learn like. YouTube has really great video tutorials for stuff. And so sometimes like it's just easier to and like more effective of your time to watch a YouTube video on a topic than read the textbook.
But then it also like results in like just like bad reading skills. Like I'm talking about like for myself too. Like I like my reading skills actually didn't really improve until like I started reading Bitcoin. Like
so Bitcoin fixes reading.
Yeah, I guess
Bitcoin fixes reading. And writing, because I think reading makes you a better writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like most people our age, like they're very constrained in what they write. Mm. Like even Twitter, like character limit, Instagram, like it's like, what's the smallest caption you can come up with? Like, I don't think there's a lot of like emails, even texts, like they're pretty short. And so, but I think like you learn so much better when you can write and when you can read and writing isn't emphasized.
Have you guys written like a full, I mean, surely they make you write essays in high school or college, no?
It depends on your major. Like if you're an English major, like you write a lot.
Mm.
I write somewhat a decent amount. This semester though, I don't have much writing
to
do.
I probably wrote more in Bitcoin than I did all throughout high school. I didn't really write that much. And I was actually like afraid, like that's the reason I got into writing because I'm just like, okay, this is an opportunity to write something that I actually care about and not like Shakespeare. So like it's a cool opportunity to write what I care about. I'm probably talking to a wall. Because my Substack, you know, it was like new, it had no subscribers. But it, you know, it let me put my thoughts out there. Got better at reading and writing. And I'm not saying that's like the case everywhere, right? I was also just like not very like I didn't try the hardest in school either. So I'm sure like if you had the opportunity to like, you know, be better at like your studies and stuff, like yeah, people like read and they write, but like there was actually like no like physical books.
I think on the writing topic, I was very grateful to have incredible teachers who would give me very detailed comments on my writing. But that's like not scalable. You can't have like such detailed feedback on every single student's writing and help them really go through ideas and how to write, because I was a terrible writer when I was in like 9th, 10th grade. And I had a teacher, he would spend literally hours, because I could see the Google comments, writing and then meeting with me one-on-one and telling me, you know, how to do it. And that was huge. Like, very, very grateful for that.
It's interesting that you say that's not scalable, because I would argue that AI will probably scale that to some degree.
I think that could, And also,
But I mean, it's interesting, because, like, reading, writing, I mean, like, maybe math, those are like your fundamental skills.
Critical thinking, but I think that's embedded in that.
But it seems like those are kind of on the decline or like not used as much, or am I wrong? What is it with like, what's your impression of your generation's ability to do those things versus maybe people 20, 30 years earlier?
I don't know. I think it's hard because it varies so much in like what type of curriculum and school you're in. But now, like, even like ChatGPT, like I use ChatGPT all the time, not to like turn stuff in, but I'll write a draft and then sometimes I might
Don't worry,
like
your professors aren't listening.
No, but I think it's a tool. Like mm-hmm. I do my own work. Like yeah. that's Bitcoin. Like yeah, do your yeah, proof yeah. of work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard because I like there's so much you could Google and read, and it's just like it's not like you're going to a library and like pulling a book off a shelf. Like mm-hmm. I don't know. I copy and paste probably my notes too much. Mm-hmm. Like. There's a lot of shortcuts that you can have, yeah. which I see in myself, like, oh, well, this might not be so good.
Mm.
So,
well, I mean, yeah. so if you, I'm not speaking about you yeah. guys specifically, but do you feel like maybe your cohort, your generation yeah. maybe uses that to their detriment, like uses a lot of these sort of shortcut tools and maybe they don't learn the things maybe that properly?
No, I don't think so, because I think so. I'm of the mindset that like things like ChatGPT could mm-hmm. just be like a calculator.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all use like calculators and that's okay. But then maybe sometimes I should know like simple like algebra a little faster than I do. So maybe it's like optimization. Like you give mm-hmm. up something in this, but it's letting you do more of that or. Yeah.
It also yeah. like made things more lenient, I feel like. Mm. Like the requirements for like turning in work, like the requirements of like turning in work and stuff like that, I feel like it made it more lenient in a sense. Mm. But obviously like yeah, it's trade offs. Like you're able to like, you know, if I'm typing notes in class, I'll just like copy it over. If I'm taking a yeah. picture of my friend's notes, mm. you can literally just like copy. on your iPhone. Yeah.
Right, right.
Literally just copy it. So it's definitely, yeah. I mean, maybe lazy, mm-hmm. but
COVID,
I think,
I think
like the limitations that are put on are like definitely like a lot easier.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so this is kind of an unformed thought, but COVID forced everything to go more digital, and so like pretty much every slide I have in lecture, it is available online. So I pull it up next to me when I'm in class. But then I have this one class this semester where there are no slides.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like I'm retaining more from that class where I have to be a little more yeah. purposeful about the notes that I'm taking than the one where I have the slide mm-hmm. and I'm like copying it over and listening to the professor. And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like mm-hmm. a study on myself. But yeah. Yeah.
Well, you guys are sort of encountering a lot of new tools at once, right? Especially because of COVID and you had like all this online learning. It seems to have affected your learning, your like, you know, your classmates and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. General view of the world almost. It's, but going back to sort of like the book thing.
Yeah.
So if, you've read the Bitcoin Standard, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that convincing to somebody in your generation, or is that like something that they would start and be like, ah, this is crap, and like throw it out?
After I read probably like my first like mm-hmm. five or so Bitcoin books, mm-hmm. It was junior year where I went and I talked to my school's library,
mm.
and I was like, hey, like, let's do, like, because they do, like, a spotlight thing every month.
Mm. Yeah.
So I bought a bunch of books, mm. You know, including your book. I have a picture I'll show you. I bought a bunch of books, and yeah. I just kind of put them on the shelf. And, you know, it went viral on Twitter. Like, it was, like, a whole thing, and a lot of other people got inspired by the idea. But I kind of wanted to see, like, what people are, like, naturally gravitating towards. I think Bitcoin Standard for, like, a high schooler is, like, more intimidating.
Mm.
It is a, you know, great book. It's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
But there are definitely, like, I, like, recommend, like, the Little Bitcoin book.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the Bullish Case for Bitcoin. Like, those mm-hmm. are less intimidating. Bigger font, like, you know, like smaller,
less pages,
smaller books. So yeah, I was also like, you know, like curious, like what's like running off the shelves. I think what did the most is like, you know, like mm-hmm. what I said, like it was like there was Thank God for Bitcoin, mm-hmm. Little Bitcoin book, and
I think I'm also a big fan of like Check Your Financial Privilege mm-hmm. and The Price of Tomorrow
mm-hmm.
because I think there's some more stories in that, like. The Bitcoin Standard is, I love the Bitcoin Standard, but it's not the first book I'm going to recommend to my friends to tell them.
And the good thing is it's evolving, because that used to be the first book that you would want to recommend.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's like, you know, there's really, like, there's different books from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. You know, so obviously, yeah, like, I recommend you, like, check your financial privilege. It's, like, very eye-opening. The Price of Tomorrow. For people who are, like, you know, like, more intellectual and, like, want to really, like, learn more about Bitcoin, like, those are definitely good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think. And this is, like, totally not a Bitcoin book, but Extreme Ownership. I don't know. I've had friends read that, and I think, because Bitcoin is also more about, like, responsibility, like, low time preference and just, like, long-term focused. And yeah, if you can just really, like, think more about yourself too, and just, like, who's the person I want to be, like, what do I value, you know, not just, like, what job do I want to do, but, like, what's the kind of life that I want to live. Some books like that I think are also good, and
they sort of steer you in a certain direction with respect to maybe having agency over your stuff rather than being a doomer, I guess.
But yeah, I think Gen Z, like, I feel very hopeful about the generation, and, like, love to be a part of Gen Z, and, you know, nothing negative to say about them. And I think they are curious. They are incredibly hardworking.
It's just the systems that they're trapped with, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
The fiat education system that you've been in for the last, what, 18 and 20 years.
Yeah, and that you focus on, like, college is on people's minds, at least in the U.S., like, I don't know, maybe middle school and, like, high school, because you have to have the right extracurriculars. Like, you're so focused on just getting into school.
I mean, my cousin, he's a rising sophomore now, and he's, like, laser focused on, like, what clubs he's going to join, because he needs it for his college, his college transfer. I'm just like, what are you talking about? You have, like, 3 more years, you know? So it's just, like, you know, all this, like, preparing, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because, like, I remember kind of being your age, and, you know, all of it seems just so important. But then once you get out of college and you're working, it's like, nobody cares. Nobody cares. And, like, people find different paths to success and stuff like that. And especially in Bitcoin, you see people that didn't graduate college or didn't go to college or maybe even didn't go to high school.
So. And kids should know that's an option. Mm. Like, I don't think everyone needs to go to college. Mm. Like, again, it's a tool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people should know that they will make themselves successful. It's not a school or a name or a company, like a brand company name, that's going to make you successful. Like, it is in you. Like, you can do it. You will be successful. You just kind of got to show up. And yeah, it's like, I just think so many people think, oh, it's the school, it's the company. But no, like people should just know that they are smart. They have it in them. They can do it.
So how do you make this message resonate with your classmates, with your generation? Like, what's like, I thought that maybe people your age already knew about Bitcoin because it's been around so long, but it sounds like it's pretty much like people in my generation, where they've kind of heard about it, but they don't really know much about it.
Yeah.
So what's the strategy for Generation Bitcoin? What are you guys doing? How are you orange pilling people?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, typically the past, really, you know, 2 years we've been around, we've been doing, you know, boot camps over the summer, obviously, you know, online, some in-person events, we've, you know, partnered with, like, you know, like, Bitcoiner Jobs, like, to, like, provide more internship opportunities. A lot of these things, like, they don't kind of, like, move themselves. Like, you still have to, like really push, like, the, you know, the internship thing. It's just like, you don't have to, like, convince Bitcoin or Jobs to do something with you. You have to convince, like, the companies to list internships, you know, because it's very difficult in the space, like, to be presented with them. Obviously, like, once you talk to people in person and show your proof of work, like, it gets easier. I mean, it gets easier, rather. But the new project, you know, which Ella will also expand on, is it's called the Bitcoin Students Club Network. So instead of going to colleges and saying, hey, like, you know, you messed up in high school, we'll give you one more chance. You know? Instead of going to them and be like, you know, adopt like a Bitcoin major, mm-hmm. or, you know, do more Bitcoin classes. We're going to already existing blockchain crypto Bitcoin clubs. And it's a good start because like there's nothing inherently wrong with like a blockchain club besides the fact they don't talk about Bitcoin at all, right? So it's just like people have to, you know, you kind of have to start there. So the goal is to like compile this huge list, you know, that we're working on of colleges globally, right? And people who are leading the blockchain clubs or already existing crypto clubs, because there's more than you think out there. Like, yeah, you have like the huge ones, Cornell, MIT, Harvard, but there's a lot of clubs that already do exist and they're very small, or they used to exist before, you know, and maybe after, you know, the bull market ended, they don't exist anymore.
Only takes like 4 years for anything to disappear, right?
Or they ran out of money or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, the goal is to like, you know, orange pill the person who's like directing, you know, that club, for example, and then we can provide them with resources. We can provide them with, you know, say they're reading, you know, Thank God for Bitcoin, and they want Jimmy Song to come in for like 20 minutes online, right? Like, we can help with like those connections, providing them more opportunities to like go to conferences,
yeah, like physical funding,
job opportunities, stuff like that.
And just, I think also, so starting a club at a university can be challenging. Like, you might need to have like 5 members and a faculty advisor, or even just to get funding from the university to do stuff. So hopefully, like, even if you're just one person at your school and you're a Bitcoiner and you want to start, like, we can just be there to help you and support you in that, and like, you're not alone on that journey. Like, right now there's 30 of us kind of all over the world that are working on it, and so it'll just keep growing and it'll be a network,
and that's a better path, yeah. Right, like learning how to start something, being an entrepreneur rather than going down the internship route, which I don't know, like, for me it sounds very fiat, right? Because that's a path that so many people have gone down, and it's a path that
climbing the ladder, and
yeah, it's a very statusy thing, and you have to fit somebody else's requirements instead of using the skills that you might have. So
yeah.
But you know, you guys are doing great work, and I'm so glad that you guys I got to talk to you. Anything that you want to talk about, any events coming up with Generation Bitcoin, or anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, I mean, besides our students club network, I mean, we're definitely coordinating with a lot of conferences and, you know, organizations as well to do events. There's a lot of things that cross paths here, like with like different universities, and based off the partnerships that we've been looking at, like, there's like, we would have never thought like these people would have been like actually interested. So the goal is to just like bring Bitcoin to them and hope it never leaves.
I think just be on the lookout for what we're gonna post, and no matter your knowledge on Bitcoin, like, we're here. Like, we're just students like you, and yeah, we're here to support.
What's your Twitter account, or X, I guess, or Instagram, TikTok,
it's Twitter.
Be Real, yeah, or Twitter. Whatever. I don't know if you have those accounts.
No, we're opting out. It's Twitter. Mine is at Arshmolu.
Yeah, and I'm at 21mm, like million for the 21st. But Generation Bitcoin is just at Gen Bitcoiners. You can send either of us DMs. We have our website, Generation Bitcoin. You can send us an email. It's just ella@genbitcoin or arsh@genbitcoin.org. And yeah, we're here. Just reach out.
All right. Well, I hope if you're listening and you are interested in doing this on your campus, then you'll contact these guys. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Unchained Capital is a sponsor of this podcast. I'm an advisor to the company. I know the team well, and I'm excited for what they are building. If you need multi-sig, collaborative custody, or a Bitcoin-native financial services partner, learn more at unchained.com.